It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Blindly obvious, it's clear as can be. The things we ignore, but we all can see. Darkness, it flees when scattered by the light. Blindly obvious, hidden in plain sight.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff. And today we are very happy to have special guest Levi Hazelman with us, who is going to kind of guide us through the steps of, you know, being a generational farmer and maybe taking some techniques that were maybe once, you know, common ground per se, no pun intended, and now back to maybe something new that we consider new anyhow. Levi, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And maybe just for a little background for the listeners, kind of just where you come from and what led you back into farming, or maybe you grew up this way.
Yeah, so I grew up with a family farm forever. My dad always had a small farm, you know, a couple hundred acres, had multiple hundreds a head of cattle, and we always farmed, you know, with my grandpa. And then as, you know, us kids got older, moved off to school, stuff like that, it wasn't very wasn't as easy to keep the family farm going. But as I came back from college and was looking for something to do more full time, we were trying to grow the farm, trying to figure out ways to make the land that we had more profitable. As land prices were rapidly increasing, you know, it just wasn't possible to grow.
So it was kind of a situation really where you guys were feeling, man, it's hard for us to kind of expand ourselves. At the same time, the land values were going up. It's more of an invitation to, hey, man, just sell your land and take the profits and move on.
Right, yeah. For a young farmer now, or somebody that didn't grow up around the farming industry right now, it's almost impossible to just buy land, buy farm equipment.
I was just going to say the land itself is crazy expensive, but you're right, the equipment is insane itself.
Yeah. You buy, you know, $15,000 an acre ground if you're lucky, and then next thing you know, you got to spend a couple hundred thousand dollars on farm equipment, and then, you know, it's just not feasible. It's not possible.
So what kind of led you into, I guess, a discovery or an understanding that, hey, there is a way that we can kind of take what we're working with and turn it into something profitable?
Yeah, so I got married in 2017, and my father-in-law actually farmed also, and it was all certified organic ground, and he was looking to do something else. Wouldn't know if I was interested in farming them acres, but it had to stay organic, and that was obviously much different than the way that we were used to farming.
Sure.
Was willing to give it a try. People thought we were crazy. We were the weird, you know, the weirdos. Mm-hmm. And
that's always as it goes when you're unconventional,
right? Right, exactly.
What's this crazy idiot doing?
Right. So we tried it out for a year. Everything went great. Next thing you know, we're transitioning all of our ground, picking up more ground from other landowners that wanted their ground to be organic. They seen the benefits of it, and we just kind of ran with it.
So when you say organic, what does that mean to the, I mean, you know, you go to the store and you see a label on something that says organic.
Correct. Yeah. So
what does that mean compared to what somebody's going to get otherwise if it doesn't read that label?
Right. So USDA organic means that it is grown 100% organic. Absolutely no conventional herbicides, pesticides, fungicides can be sprayed on it. There is some organic versions of that. Most of them are so expensive and they just don't work. We've tried over and over again on a couple different things, a couple different products that, you know, companies are willing to donate, but they just don't work.
And these are organic pesticides you're talking about?
Correct.
Okay. And they just obviously don't hold the same weight as your conventional.
Right.
Poisons.
I mean, they really are poisonous, but also you can't make the argument that they do accomplish their task.
Yeah, I think the goal is to poison the bugs or the fungus or whatever just enough where it doesn't kill you.
Right.
Either, right?
Right.
I mean, really, is that what it is?
Yeah, pretty much.
But then there are cancers through the roof and all kinds of other issues, health issues, and they're not related to any of that stuff. Don't worry.
Right.
Oh, all right. Good.
Yeah, so we're farming it right around, I mean, just over 1,100 acres now. That's organic. And people that are against organic, their number one thing is they'll say, well, organic uses, if not more, pesticides and herbicides than what conventional farmers do, because conventional, now they got it so condensed to where they only have to spray not near as much as what they used to back in the day, but it's just so potent.
So a little bit goes a long way.
Correct.
Okay.
That's what they want you to kind of believe in that mindset. But I've been organic for 8 years. This is my 8th year. And the last 5 years, we have used absolutely zero herbicides, pesticides, anything like that. We've used absolutely none. So when people will say, well, the organic people, they use more, you know, it might just be labeled as organic, but we use more. That's just not true.
So you literally use zero.
Zero, absolutely zero.
Did I miss this? Did you talk about with organic GMO, like where does that come into play?
Yeah, so we can't use absolutely no GMO seed. It all has to be non-GMO, untreated. There is some organic seed treatments out there, but it's basically the same thing. They're kind of expensive. Some companies offer it, some don't.
It seems like there was a time, I remember when I was younger, where they were promising, you know, GMO is going to be kind of like what we saw in Star Trek, where you punch in the computer and a giant watermelon comes out or whatever, and it'll feed a village, which we never got, right? That never happened.
Don't be so fast. They're working on like 3D printed meat right now.
Right. Well, that's true. That's true.
Haven't you seen that video where that dude tries that 3D printed salmon and like tries to, he's like, oh, it's good.
We've also got test tube babies. It's true. Yeah, all these things are true.
Plant burgers.
You know, we're trying to improve what God gave us. And I don't think that's a good idea. I think that there's been unintended consequences. But my whole point with the GMO was that it almost reminds me of a different category, but like a pyramid scheme. You know, mm-hmm. where all you're really doing is enriching the people who made it as you steal the wealth from everybody else. But it's not just not for food. It's not wealth. It's your health. You know, it's maybe it is wealth, too, though. You know, it's we're having, again, we discussed a little bit of this earlier, unintended consequences. And I guess the whole idea, the reason, whether it's healthy poison or less healthy poison, the overall goal, you're trying to get a net gain. Right in the production of food, you're trying to keep the bugs or fungus or whatever invasive species of plants from starving the crop you want to grow.
Yeah,
correct. So that's basically it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to say the conventional argument then against this is going to be that somebody would say, well, your production can't be near as good as somebody who's using these pesticides, right?
Correct. That's another big argument. I've helped over the last 5 years probably 1,000 other acres get transitioned over, and
wow.
We're seeing maybe a 10% yield loss, maybe 15, somewhere in there.
What would be common, like for a conventional farmer, what would be a common yield loss on a given year?
Like a conventional corn right now in our area, guys are shooting for like 220, 230 bushel an acre, maybe 65, 70 bushel beans, you know, and we're in like the 180 range, 185,
okay.
And we're still getting 45, 50 bushel beans. Our price margins are much higher. We don't have near the cost in the chemicals.
That makes sense because you're obviously putting much less on your product.
Correct. Our seed's a little bit cheaper. We do have a lot more labor though, because we're out all summer long, row crop cultivating, pulling weeds, stuff like that. But basically, I'm glad you kind of brought it up, Jeff. We're just kind of bringing back farming to what God intended it to
right.
be. It's more natural. It's the way He wanted it. He wanted it to be. Can if all the acres across the world in the United States were farmed organically, could we feed the world? Maybe, maybe not. I don't really know. If you got everybody to do a really good job and get on board, I think we really could. The way it is now, no, I don't think we could. But I'm not trying to feed the world. I'm trying to feed my area.
That's right. Exactly what I'm just going to ask is, were we ever really intended to feed the world?
Right.
If everybody was doing their share, theoretically, across the world, everyone would be fed.
Right.
Well, it's a separate poison. We have been indoctrinated since we were children about the beauty of communism and socialism. And so we just expect that the state's always going to care for us and we bear no responsibility. We're all grown up. We bear no responsibility for our food, for our housing, for our clothing. It's just all going to be taken care of for us. Give me.
Well, it is a good, I mean, if you've never, you know, grown up around a farm, I think around here, a lot of us, maybe if we haven't lived on a farm, at least have the benefit of there's so much farm country around here. Everybody at least knows a farmer, right? To where, you know, if you grew up in a city environment, you never get to experience that. There's a lot of people that probably have seriously no idea where really their food actually comes from.
You just jumped right in, and I wanted to make sure our people knew that that was sarcasm for communism, socialism, saying it's beautiful. Just want to make sure that everyone, I was picking on it.
Well, the truth is no matter what, you'll always have people that you could lay it out for them perfectly, show them all the science behind conventional grown food, organic food. If there was a massive, massive health benefit, they won't care. It doesn't matter to them. They're still going to buy whatever's cheaper, right. You know, whatever just to get by. Mm-hmm. That's why I say, you know, I'm not out to feed the world because not everybody cares. Sure. But I'm trying to help the people that do care.
Well, the other part too is...
That's important though, man.
It is.
If you don't care, meaning like if I didn't care to eat clean food, why would you care to serve me clean food?
Right.
And if I don't want it for myself, why would you care to want it for me?
Yeah.
These other organizations who are doing it for cheaper are marketing that and have way more funds available, even some government contracts to do so.
And they're, right, and they're the ones that tell us that organic's not better.
Right.
No, they'll be the ones, the first ones to say, you know, organic uses more herbicides, more pesticides. And if that's true or not.
You're wasting your money.
Yeah, exactly. Don't pay for the extra, for the label.
A carrot's a carrot, right?
Yeah, what we're feeding you is just fine. And it doesn't matter if it's full of, you know, red 40, yellow 5. It doesn't matter. The artificial dyes, it's safe. You know,
FDA's. The product list is taller than you are.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. If they say it's safe, you're just supposed to believe them that it's safe. And
yeah, when natural foods have all these added things to them, they're no longer natural.
Right. Every time I speak on, like, I go to other organic grain conferences and stuff like that, like, I won't tell people that, that you absolutely have to eat organic or you're going to die. If you want to eat GMO grains and foods with them, that's your choice. You know, if you want to eat meat grown in feedlots, that's fine. You know, will it kill you? Maybe, maybe not. Probably, you know, probably not. People have been living like this forever. But if you look at, you know, the last 20, 30 years of our health in the United States, look at the pathway that we're on.
Yes.
I'm looking to take care of my family, raise our family the way that we want to raise them. And if you want to get on board with that, that's fine. If not, that's okay. But on the same side, don't turn around and tell us what we're doing is wrong.
Right.
You know, kind of like mind your own business type thing. We'll do things our way. You can do things your way. And we can agree to disagree on stuff.
That's America in itself, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It used to be anyway.
I think that's
right. Yeah, it used to be. Now, if you have an opinion, you're a terrible person. Right. You know, you're supposed to just be quiet and do what they tell you to do. And
you have a thought that's different than everyone else's. How dare you?
It's the irony. The people who yell tolerance are the most intolerant people in the world.
Yeah. I think with this new administration that we got with the RFK, you know, the MAHA movement, if you truly, I mean, put your opinion aside of RFK. If you don't like him as a person, that's okay. But if you can sit there as a parent, like most of us are, and say, like, his big push right now is pulling the artificial dyes out of all food.
Right. Who's against that?
Yeah, how can you be a parent and be against that?
Well,
you know,
guys, hold on a second. You would say the same thing about corruption with the money that is being diverted to these case studies, like, you know, we're gonna, this one lady I saw, she lost her job. She was crying. She's in Kauai making over $100,000, lost her benefits. And what'd she do every day? Mostly post on social media her pictures of being on a beautiful beach, but she counted birds every day, you know, just for study. Exactly. And she's like, I lost my job because this administration. It's like,
now, how can you be mad that you lost that job instead of just grateful that for a while you got to hold it?
You got a vacation. You got paid.
Just like, man, for like 2 or 3 years out of my life, somebody paid me to count birds in Hawaii. What a gift.
Well, I mean, there's all these ridiculous studies, and I'm just naming a few environmental stuff they talk about. You know, what are the effects? And I'm just going to be stupid here. What are the effects of marshmallows on trees? Let's hang them from the tree branches and see what happens. And some of the and I made that up, but some of the studies are that ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's just dumb.
Yeah,
it's a waste of money.
And people think that we should be doing it. That's right. What we should be spending our tax dollars on.
When right. In reality, we have real studies going on through people just like you across the entire country who are like, hey, look, here's the data of real science. And here's the real outcomes. Mm-hmm. But, oh, no, those aren't real studies because you're not wearing a white coat.
Yeah.
You don't write it and publish in a journal.
Your observations don't count.
Yeah. Like, well, how about your real lived experience? So you seem like somebody, Levi, that who has paired science and biblical principle or scripture together as one. I think you see them in the same light, that science and the Bible can exist together. And I kind of just, I guess I wonder, where did you gather that from, or where do you have that understanding from?
So I guess looking back, I met my wife I guess we got married in 2017. And June, you know, I grew up Catholic, fell out of the church at a young age. Our whole family did.
Okay.
Went off to college, kind of did our own thing.
So by the time you were graduating or like a young man on your own, you had obviously heard the story, knew of God, but like it wasn't really
your
living experience.
I wouldn't say I was not living the, you know,
sure, you weren't living a godly lifestyle.
No.
Sure.
No. Not that I was, you know, in
a terrible person. You just weren't living a godly lifestyle.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So then when I, you know, met my wife and we started going to church in Findlay, and then I got baptized in the river here in Findlay in 2017. Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
it was all cool. Natural.
Yeah, exactly. Going back to the natural. Had to check for leeches and stuff afterwards.
You know, an organic baptism. Yeah, an organic and baptism.
Flowing water, just like you would have wanted.
That's awesome. I like it.
But yeah, so then, you know, really jumped in, got really, really involved with church for a long time, and, you know, reading scripture and just the way things should be more natural, the way that he wanted it, you know, the way they lived back then. And I just think we got so far away from it, you know, as a culture in the country. And it's just, everything just needs to be so fast and so simple, so user-friendly. You know, that's just the way that everybody wants it to be.
Yep.
So as a nation.
Immediate consumerism.
Yeah.
As a nation, you're what you just described as your life was a microcosm of what our nation did. The timeline's different. You drifted, our nation's drifted. And I hope, like you, we come back.
Right.
I hope.
Yeah. Everything's just so money driven. I mean, unfortunately, it's what can I get food cheaper so I can work longer, have more money to spend on useful things. So, you know, worldly things that we don't need.
Right.
You know, people just don't slow down.
We've need like, oh, you need this. Everybody else has it. So you need it too.
People are just willing to sacrifice their health, buy cheaper food so they can drive a nicer car or have a nicer house. And it's really sad. And they put their kids, you know, if they have kids.
All to please other people that we think are concerned, when in reality, no one actually cares.
Not one, nobody cares what type of car you, I mean, if they do, they're probably not your friends anyway.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Well, what you just described is we've become a very shallow, very superficial, that we have a saying for it, keeping up with the Kardashians.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so ridiculous.
Right. Just trying to live in the flesh all the time.
But put a price on your health when you receive a bad diagnosis.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you care.
Mm-hmm. And I can say I really didn't dig into this a whole lot until, you know, I started having kids. You know, my daughter's 5 and 3, mm-hmm. and then I have a son that just turned 1. And watching what my wife does with their food, and then I take them out, you know, to a volleyball game or something like that, and they want a bag of Skittles or something simple. You don't think much of it, you know.
Right.
You,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's fine. And their reaction to that, or their attitude the next day,
yeah.
It's just unbelievable.
To our food-like products.
In the exact same boat with my wife, because I used to argue. I'm like, dude, who cares?
Yeah.
It's a bag of Skittles. Exactly like you just said. And then you're right. The next, they just act off the wall crazy.
Yeah.
Well, there's a regulation organization that makes sure that all of our food-like products are safe. I don't know why you're worried.
Yeah. They have our best interest in mind, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I'm sure.
They care deeply about you.
Yeah, about the kids.
That's right. Absolutely.
And maybe I'm too far gone, but I won't worry about
sarcasm,
the kids.
Folks. Sarcasm.
So this type of a lifestyle for your wife has been... She's been living, like, she was raised this way.
Yeah, for the
most part. They cleaned food. They,
correct.
They knew organic farming was kind of the way to go.
Right. I mean, maybe not always, maybe not in their younger.
Sure.
But as, you know, they moved over towards Macomb area, and that's kind of the way they lived. And then, you know, she stays at home now. Oh, she stays at home with the kids, you know, big homesteader, you know, bakes her own bread, makes her own, you know, we have our own chicken, have our own cows.
You might as well like just 30. Get an Airbnb out there, maybe. Yeah. A little like an Amish farm set
make
up.
Your own soap.
I've been trying to get her to get like our kids little Amish like dresses and stuff, but.
Well, there you go. You can call it like the Hazelman Haven or something.
Are you sporting the Amish haircut? You
know, they have no, I wish. Well, so my parents are building a new house right now and the Amish are building it. So it's it is actually very, I drove them a couple hour drive to go pick up one of their new draft horses, their stud. So we had a couple hour drive one way and then a couple hour drive the other, and getting to talk to them, I could really live like they could. I mean, maybe not without the hot showers and stuff, but
yeah, but some of them are adapted nowadays. They get a little more modern.
Right.
It is wild. They're up here in Ohio, it's cold up here and they don't have electric heat.
Yeah.
I guess they got wood stoves, but right. I mean,
I'll tell you what else the Amish don't have. Speaking of just health, they don't seem to have a lot of the same
health
ailments
problems
and illnesses that
tend to plague the
regular society.
Yeah, the chronic diseases. They eat healthy. They're, you know, not to stereotype them, but when's the last time you've seen an overweight Amish person?
Sure. Right. Well, all their food's locally sourced, though. They grow it. It's right back into the community.
Yeah, they work hard.
All the autism rates are going through the roof, but not for the Amish.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah.
At some point, you got to go, what are they doing? Maybe God's just blessing them, and that could be.
Well, then let me be Amish.
I go back.
That right there would convert me. I'm going to be Amish.
Yep.
I'm in.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time this last summer at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and I think I saw one Amish family the entire time. You know, and they could have been there for a number of reasons.
Visiting.
They were probably building the hospital.
Like that could be.
They just put an expansion wing on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how, I was going to get into that. So you just had the birth of your son here about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that had to be a real test of faith because you guys, you know, in the onset, I remember there being, at least from social media, some real scares of not knowing what was coming next, per se.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was a planned home birth, same as like our middle daughter.
Oh, so you guys have already done this?
Yeah. Yeah.
You are like a legit homesteader.
Our 5-year-old was born at the hospital. It was our first one. We didn't know, you know, how it was going to go.
Sure.
Basically, she had it all natural at the hospital. So, she really wanted to have a home birth. So, hired a midwife and everything went great. So, wanted to do it again with her son. We still had, you know, 2 ultrasounds. This never showed up on the ultrasound, but he was born at home on time, full term.
So you guys are just like setting up business as usual.
Yep.
Great. Going to have the baby and carry on our way.
Yep. Had the baby and our midwife started noticing some issues. You know, he had, you know, his left eye was fully white. He had a curvature in his back. Some things didn't look right. So, EMS came and took her to Lima, and then they looked at some things and they said, yeah, you need to go on to Columbus. So we spent first 17 days there getting all settled down, trying to figure out what was actually going on. Did some tests, found out he had some mosaic trisomy 16. Very, very, very rare.
Now, is this a genetic disorder or what is this?
Yeah, genetic disorder. So, okay. Trisomy 16 is like the number one cause in ladies to have miscarriages. Okay. Like 90-some% of them are never carried full term, never born alive. But because it's mosaic trisomy 16, only some of his cells have the trisomy 16.
So what's that mean?
So it just gave me like some goosebumps. I feel like this was like a God gave you all this.
Yeah.
What's that mean? So this condition, what are the symptoms or consequences of that disorder?
Yeah, so he has permanently dilated left pupil. Most of everything is on his left side. So initially he thought maybe he had like a stroke in the womb. Okay. He has scoliosis, tetralogy of Tiflo. So he had a hole in his heart. Like his left foot is out a little bit. He has like a, my wife will make fun of me because I can't ever think of all the scientific terms, polydactyl, where he has like an extra thumb or part of one, but you know, just cosmetic stuff. But the big thing was the holes in his heart. So we go home for, I think, about 3 months. We go back in June. They do open heart surgery, fix that. So the first 17 days wasn't too bad. The first couple of days was pretty scary, you know, not real sure what was going on, but he was pretty stable. It wasn't like panic mode, nothing like that. We weren't exactly sure what was going on. He was still breathing on his own, stuff like that, but he was eating. So he had a feeding tube in.
Gotcha.
But it wasn't until the second round, you know, it's open heart surgery where things kind of made a bad turn. They did open heart surgery, put him back together. He's in ICU for, I think it was like 6-7 days. They were thinking about moving us to the B side to get ready to go home because they told us 5 days we'll be in and out of there. But we start noticing he starts getting bigger and bigger, like blowing up like a balloon. Pulmonary hypertension. So they're treating him, they're giving him one thing and then that's not working. So then they give him another that kind of offset that and then give him another. So next thing you know, he's on like 7 different drugs. You know, they're just pumping things with him, trying to get him to be able to breathe again. Right. You know,
so the poor guy's a chemistry experiment.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he would blow up like a balloon, wouldn't be able to breathe. He'd turn real purple. He'd cry for hours on end. And, you know, we're trying to show the doctors this and they won't. They come in the morning for 10 minutes and see him and then they off they go. Right. You know, they're not there to actually watch it. And we do lose him a couple times. Not to get too emotional, but I remember texting all my siblings on a Sunday that they should probably come up Monday that next morning because that was probably going to be it.
That just gave me more goosebumps.
Yeah, that we were going to lose him. And so that was hard. That was really, really hard. But he pulled through and it seemed like that was kind of the turning point for us that things got better. Fast forward till now, you know, we, my wife was a big advocate that we needed to get him off of this one drug. He was on one heart medication that was supposed to help with things. And she kept saying that the reason why he's not eating much and spitting up and throwing up all the time was because there's a drug called sildenafil. And we kept trying to get our cardiologist to agree to it. Well, finally he did. He's like, well, we're going to do another echo in 3 weeks. Go ahead and take him off. We'll come back in 3 weeks and we'll see what happens. And it was like a light switch. Like once that sildenafil faded off in a couple of days, boom, he'd start eating again.
So did she get a white coat when you guys were there?
She should. She really could. That's, I mean, right. We could not have done this without her. She was absolutely amazing. I mean, we had our emotional times through there, but
think about, though, you know, what a lesson from this that you guys can be as advocates for. You know how many people have those same intuitional feelings or through research they've done, and they push and they get to, no.
The experts say.
Yeah, it can't be this. But man, if you're sure, just keep pushing.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer. If we would have just let the doctors go from the beginning, do whatever they needed to do from the time we got there to the end, that we would have lost him. Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for my wife doing researches on what he was all on and the consequences of each, that they would have just kept playing with it until it was too late.
I don't know if I've told you, I'm a pastor. And so every time we have a church member go into the hospital, we try and drill it into their head. You got to be your own best advocate.
Absolutely.
Because if you're not, what's the third leading cause of death in America today? You know, you don't see that statistic put out there too often, but.
Well, and that's not to hate on the, not to hate on the doctors who are obviously providing wonderful care either.
I've got two doctors in my family, my father and my older brother.
Okay.
I love doctors. I don't trust them. And the reason I don't trust them is because my dad and my brother don't trust them, and they're doctors.
My sister's a doctor here in Findlay. Yeah. She's a podiatrist.
Right.
And same thing. She does her job very well. She does exactly what she's taught. But she won't. The reason I like her so much is because she won't push hard drugs if you don't need it.
Right.
If you go in for something small, she's not going to give you. You know, but
Levi, there's a pill for that.
I know. And she won't do that. And I love her for being her. Yeah.
And in the same token of, like, that absolutely happens. In the same token, though, people got to take some shared responsibility in that. If you, the average person, if they go to the doctor because they got the sniffles or, you know, respiratory something or another going on, and they don't get a medication when they leave, they're mad.
They're gypped. They feel gypped.
How dare I come here and spend $150 and I left here with nothing. Just because I got a cold. Well, yeah, you already knew you had a cold. Just stay home and get better.
Yeah. Give me the magic pill. Yeah.
It's all about sales. It's all about sales.
Tell me this. We've been talking about this for a little bit now, 30 minutes we're going on. But what are, in a real fast nutshell, the reasons you go to the inconvenience, the expense for your family to consume organic?
We truly believe that you can farm 100% organic. With the right tillage practices, with the right cover crops, you can raise a more nutrient dense base product for the consumers, which we're a consumer of it. And with the health benefits, it's the soil health benefits of it. It's just a more natural, better way of farming.
We tend to distrust people trying to sell us something.
Correct.
And to me, one of the tests that you should always look at is the person selling you the product. Are they themselves a consumer of it?
Right.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. It'd be terrible if I sit here and try, if I farm 1,000 acres organic,
right?
But I don't eat organic. Right. That would be a problem.
Right. But if you think about it, the vast majority of the things that we're buying from people, we don't run it through that test. And what you're telling us is you don't just believe it so you can make money with it. You believe it because you believe it's giving your family health and benefits that you can't get consuming the other stuff.
Correct.
I don't want to call it garbage.
I think more simply put, you would probably say, like, you believe in it so much that your first priority is to grow it, to consume it, and a benefit to you is that you get to make money from it.
Correct. Yeah. There is a financial benefit of farming organic. Sure. I mean, it is more work, physical labor. I'm not saying all farmers, because I'll get a lot of backlash. There's some conventional farmers that want to plant in the spring, they want to spend all summer out on the lake or doing whatever they want to do.
That's
they
what
come
they
back
the 4x4, right?
Right.
4 weeks in the spring and 4 in the fall.
Yeah. And then come back in the fall, harvest it, and be done. And they, you know, they want to, that's how they want to farm. So when they think of organic, you know, you got to be there all summer long, you know, row crop, cultivating, pulling weeds, stuff like that. That's not what they want to do, but there is a financial benefit from it. You know, our grain, when we're brought to the elevator, is worth twice as much as what conventional is. But the funny thing is looking back 8 years ago, 10 years ago, when you would go to the store and look at I'm just going to pick bread, for example, an organic loaf of bread versus conventional loaf of bread, it used to be about double the price. And so that's why people pushed away from organic. They didn't want to spend twice the money. It's not that way anymore. You go to Aldi's or Costco and look around, there might be a 50 cent difference. You know, it's not this gigantic mountain that you got to climb to be all organic. The price difference isn't like what it used to be.
So, well, isn't part of the idea of the model that we have is that in the competition that drives prices lower, but the other part is on the flip side, what we've seen is consolidation, and where the cheaper product, once they became the only market for that, they jacked the price.
Right.
So what we've seen essentially is it all stabilized and almost become equalized.
Well, that's
right?
a great point too, in that all of these smaller organic companies in the past who were maybe double in cost, there was such a small market space that all those companies were kind of gobbled up by the big players. And then they controlled the market share or just changed the ingredient.
Yeah.
And the price went up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the price went up.
And you might get some listeners here that are young farmers. And I'd encourage them to look into it or try it, because farming's really hard to get into. Organic farming, there's a lot of people that think bad about it. They think that the way that their dad did it, their grandpa did it, that's the right way and the only way. And with land prices and the cost of everything, you have to be open-minded and willing to try new things. If I would not have tried it 8 years ago, I don't know what, I'd probably work in a factory job somewhere. But there's a lot of benefits to it. You put in the hard work and you get rewarded, and you can make a full-time living off of a lot fewer acres.
I got to ask this question. Okay, so you're a farmer. Do you also have a garden?
Very, very big.
Isn't
garden.
That wild?
Yeah, well... Yeah, I think my wife is a big homesteader.
As soon as when he said his wife was a homesteader, I knew he had a garden.
I know, but to me, it's funny. It's like you got your own separate area that's just for your family. So what do you grow?
Oh, my wife. Well, like on our farm?
No, on your garden. In your garden.
So he says, what don't I grow?
Yeah, well, that's probably a shorter list. My wife does all that because I'm busy all summer long with our farm. But she's got, I think it's like 40 foot wide, and it was like 100 foot long. We shortened it up a little bit because last summer, being gone all summer, our garden wasn't that great. But she puts the fabric down, takes the cattle panels, makes the hoops. You know, she does green beans and tomatoes and squash and cucumber. I mean, she does everything. I can show you some pictures. She wants to maybe this summer, now that the girls are a little older, set up like a farm stand in our driveway. We got like a big U-shaped driveway, and let the girls kind of take care of it, because she's going to have 24 chickens this year.
So laying eggs.
Yeah, put eggs.
You'll be able to build a new house. You sell a couple dozen of them eggs.
Right. Prices are good, man.
You build one bigger than your dad's just to show them up. What would you say, through your experience so far, is the best piece of advice you think you've been given or that you would give to someone else?
I would say trust the process. Absolutely. From the beginning, I always thought, you know, like, what am I going to do about bugs? What am I going to do about fungus? What am I going to do about, you know, all the weeds? The thing is I was always taught from the beginning, and I help coach other young guys that want to get into organic. Trust the process with crop rotation, cover crops, using the natural manures. You'll have naturally good biology to fight off the bad biology. And I was always super worried growing like organic beans that I'd get bugs, Japanese beetles. You know, I'd have all these bugs that would eat all my crop.
Sure.
They're just not there. And if a farmer's listening to this, you're going to think I'm full of crap. And I invite them to come walk our fields anytime. We don't have them issues. The only fungus issues that we have in our corn is from where deer bite into it, and a fungus grows after that.
So whose process?
The organic process. God's process.
God's process.
He gave us it. I mean, he gave us good biology, you know, and we're, most of these conventional fertilizers are full of salt. They're spreading so many salt-based products on your field, you're killing all of your good biology. Well, when you don't have anything there to fight off the bad, they just keep thriving there. So
what's really cool too is if you can apply that exact same mantra, even if you don't farm, and trust the process. And what you just said, something I thought was really cool, is you said, you know, I kept worrying about all these things when I got started I thought could potentially happen, So I was, you know, I was kind of set me back. I didn't know if I could continue on. And then as I did, I realized they never even existed. And isn't that exactly what we do in any part of our lives, whatever right. journey we're on, is we right. worry about all these fears that could potentially be, but don't actually exist.
Yeah.
Well, like they're not really there.
All those worries and fears do is feed some other authority figure other than the one that we should be looking to, which is God.
Right.
And if you remember in Genesis 6, for those Bible thumpers out there like me, God created and said, it's good, it's good, it's good. And what I keep finding over, I can give you example after example. There's what man did with what God did, and it's not good. Go back to God's process.
Right.
Go back to his process. Right. You're not going to improve what... It's so arrogant. I know we're so smart, but believe me, God is smarter. It takes more information to create, not less. God knows more than us, infinitely more than us. Trust his process.
Well, I kind of think maybe in farming and in life, once we trust that process, it kind of sounds, Levi, like you're saying, farming's a lot easier and a lot smoother for you now. Maybe not in a labor sense. You still have to labor for your good, but yet... The process itself now is much smoother and much more efficient, would you say?
I agree. Yep.
Awesome. On closing, Jeff, do you want to pray us out?
Yeah, let's pray. God, I thank you for Levi, for his example, for his trust in you. And I pray that in all areas of our life, we can all get back to that, back to what you gave us, as opposed to what man's trying to offer us. May we trust you. It's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. This has been Blindly Obvious. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes, as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here, and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. Peace, love, and God bless. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. And remember, eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
Past the signs each day, in little things missed along the way, the symbols hidden in glamour's light, blindly obvious, but out of sight. The magician's lie, a trick so good you don't ask why. The truth, it sits with open arms, but we fool ourselves with deception's charm. Blindly
when you see it too. Oh, I can see it. The roads lead back to you.